I would assume that you conveyed many of these values, obvious values that you had in life in terms of the Jewish community, Jewish involvement to your children. And I wondered if you could tell us how you thought you conveyed these.
Well, you know, I always said they were a part of my communal life. They were not separated from it. During my many leadership roles, presidencies and chairmanships, when we didn't have answering machines, my children were wonderful. People used to say to me, I always know that if I call your home, you'll get the message, you'll call me back, you'll know what the message is. My girls worked with me in routine things, you know, if it was stuffing envelopes, we did it at home together. But more than that, I did a lot of speaking, and I did a lot of slide commentary. You know, Speakers Bureau was always very important in Federation. It's very important in every organization.
Right.
Every organization has tried to convey its message. And my girls would hear me rehearsing. They would hear me actually, not just rehearsing, but they went with me. I had a neighbor who once said, my parents always went to everything with us. We were a family unit, and this man said, you always have the whole family, Gert, when you go somewhere. They're all there all the time. And I said, you know, Zorba said it. Zorba the Greek said, the whole catastrophe. We always traveled as a family. And this family feeling is very instilled in our children. And I think they learned early the importance of sharing your good fortune with people. Donna and Robbie both did communal reaching out as kids. Donna more than Robbie, because Robbie was busy in performance. But they both early on became volunteers at the hospital. And did that for years. They both worked in the summer at home. When they were too young to work elsewhere, they worked in Paul's office. The office girls used to say that when Donna came in at 13, she turned the whole office upside down. They had a waltz to her drum, or march to her drum. She was very organized. She became president of ADASA as a very young
she
woman. Did.
Did
I mention that to
no,
you?
No, that's what I was
saying. In Connecticut, yes. She became president of ADASA. She was honored before she was 40 by State of Connecticut Region of ADASA for having launched and developed a new chapter of younger women who branched out from the New Haven chapter. She was very active in Federation. She went back to school, got her MBA, and is working full-time. So, but she still does communal work with ADASA. She still does Federation work. She's working at the JCC in New Haven. So there you are. She's right in, up to her neck.
And your other daughter, she's
involved?
And
our other daughter is so involved, and I have something so nice to say. Are you familiar with the Wexner Foundation, the Leslie Wexner Foundation?
Yes.
You are, Judy. Leslie Wexner of The Limited, the philanthropist, recognized the fact that our young leadership, many of our young leadership come from reform homes without the knowledge, religious knowledge, the biblical knowledge, the historical knowledge of their Judaism. And so he created a foundation which is almost like a two-year postgraduate course of study. And they're called Wexler Scholars. And Robbie was just appointed one in New York. She just became
beautiful.
A Wexler Scholar for
that
2 years.
That is beautiful.
Yeah. She's on the National Young Leadership Board of UJA. She was in charge of all the training for Super Sunday in New York. She went out to the island. She went to the temples. She was the chief trainer for workers' training for Super Sunday.
So you really
She's
did
very committed.
Convey...
It came
values
through loud
that
and clear.
Meant
yeah.
were real important.
Yeah, truthfully, I don't think either of our girls would consider marrying a non-Jew. Robbie was a very elegant non-Jewish man, was very much in love with her, and she with him, but the religious difference was too great for her
to accept.
To accept.
Well,
so it apparently transmitted.
Yes, well, that's good, because
I hope it goes on into other generations.
Yes, and I was thinking of our younger generation now coming up here. Wondered whether you see them as picking up all the kinds of things you used to do. I have a sense that they're a little bit away from it. What you
their think. Volunteerism is different. You know that, Shirley and Judy. There is not quite the, what shall I say, the sense that we owe it to our Jewishness, to our roots, to our heritage, to give. There was a very definite me generation, and we find that in leadership. But I'm beginning to see, of course, organizations have been reaching out like crazy, and they take volunteers on any level now, on any level of giving. When I was president, let me just make a specific point of Ladies Hospital Aid Society, and we were over 4,000 membership. We didn't have one paid employee. We didn't have one person in an office. So that meant we did everything. We stamped, we addressed, we printed, we did everything. Aside from the glamorous aspect of things, our volunteerism was all over the place. I mean, my first volunteer activity was with the library service cart. I went on the floors with the books twice a week. I loved it. I was bringing the books to the patients. We did everything. There's no organization in the city today, I don't think care how small it is, that doesn't have a paid employee. Because our volunteers, many of the women, as we know, are in the workforce. They don't have the luxury of time that I had, that I was fortunate to have. They don't have, it's a combination of things. Maybe they don't have the depth of commitment, and they don't have the luxury of time.
This is what I wondered, whether you really thought that even if the time were there, whether there would be some depth of commitment. Somehow it seems to me that that has been modified.
Well, Shirley, you know, I was a product of the Depression. Let's look at it that way, too. There's the economic reality, and monetary values were and are, to this day, they're different to me. To this day, they're different to me. I cannot be impressed. I will not be impressed by labels. I simply still think it's great to get a bargain. I my kids laugh at me, you know. I save tea bags. So, you too. And the funny thing is, my younger daughter does too, and she's hardly of that generation. So I think when we were the product of knowing, you know, that everything didn't come so easily, our generation of our children have been indulged. I like to think mine aren't spoiled.
But do you think that they feel that their help, their strength isn't needed anymore?
I can't think that because they don't attend meetings
even in evenings.
But you see, the reaching out in every leadership role that I've played, and on every board that I sit on, I see the reaching out by leadership. Very interesting. I was at a National Council board meeting just last week, and a new project came up. I can't divulge the nature of the project because it hasn't been approved yet. But I will say this to you. I sat there as probably the oldest member of the board. And so when this project came up, and it requires a physical aspect to participation, we had a lot of young women in the room. In fact, a couple of them came with their babies, which I thought was wonderful. And I said, you know, I want to ask the young women sitting here, will you participate in this? What will your involvement be in this? You know, I couldn't get them to speak. I couldn't get them to answer me.
Reluctant to take
reluctant to commit. They're attorneys. They're CPAs. They're PR people. They're bright. They're educated. I do find that there is a difficulty in communication for this generation, too. whether they don't want to appear to be so upfront about themselves, whether they think it's more fashionable to be laid back, mm-hmm. whether I am not modest when I speak up, you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. or whether they just don't want to commit themselves, whether it's even in terms of their opinions, in terms of their involvement. I see this wherever a younger person is conducting a meeting. I see it at our UJF board meetings. David Shapiro stands up there and begs for response. They usually try to start the ball rolling. They're more introverted somehow in their leadership.
Do you think that also the value system is different?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
That what they see as important in life,
oh, yes.
is not what we saw as important,
yes,
in terms of...
Yes, I think that they're how many generations removed from the Holocaust, you see? Mm-hmm. The whole pluralism of our society, the whole assimilation of their educational process, some of it good, but much of it for the Jewish people not so good. Not so
what
good.
Do you think that organizations, I mean, there are organizations that are dying down.
Absolutely.
Because of lack of, and that isn't even much volunteer except to come to meetings. What do you see them doing to stimulate, rekindle
Very
a
difficult.
Sense of commitment as a young Jewish person who's going to be taking
over leadership role.
Because the
That's
other
right.
people won't
this
be
This is why the Wexner Foundation has come along with a course of study for leadership. I think, the mission program, the missions going to Israel for young people, for teenagers, mm-hmm. for high school students. Are you familiar with the march that the young people participate in?
Mm-hmm.
All of these kinds of activities. Mm-hmm. I think when we give out our scholarship, our student aid checks now, we do it personally. We used to send them to try to be impartial and objective, mm-hmm. but now we meet with the young people and we say to them, just remember, when you are in a position to help, wherever you're living, that you were aided by a Jewish communal organization that recognized your need to get your education. I had a nurse whom we aided from hospital aid for years. Her mother, she's Polish, her mother spoke with a very strong accent. When I called her mother the last time we gave this girl $1,000, she said to me in her very broken, humble English, what can I do? How can I repay you? And I said, well, you've done a great deal by giving us this wonderful young woman so deserving of aid in the community who has made a mark for herself. But I said, I want you, if you really want to know what you can do, I said, you can indicate to your family and your friends that it was a Jewish woman's organization that gave you, your daughter, this student scholarship aid through her 4 years of nursing in Pitt. I was right up front with it.
Yes.
Because, you know, how else could I convey to her, a Polish lady from a modest home, that we felt this young woman, her daughter, deserved aid,
yes.
regardless
mm-hmm.
of religion.
Mm-hmm.
But many a leader today won't say that, I'm afraid.
But you see, I'm thinking even of our own Jewish
yes.
Young people.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yes.
That's what I mean. Our assimilation is so great that, you know, I'm now seeing a little bit of, I don't like to use the word backlash, but I have a very reformed Jewish friend who said to me, I've decided, she lives in Florida and she's generous, she's very, very charitable, I'm giving only to Jewish causes, because she says nobody else will.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else will. Now, we've never...
Do you think our young people think that?
No, they don't. No, they don't, because they're being recognized by every cultural organization, they're being reached out to by every cultural organization, by every institution. By every fundraising group. No, they don't think that way. No.
Mm-hmm. Does it frighten you?
Oh, and yet yesterday was Super Sunday.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we saw such an outpouring that you wonder. Yes, of course. Well, I think the intermarriage is very frightening. I tremble because I have three grandsons in a very... Our grandson at Harvard dates non-Jewish girls. They're the girls he meets who are bright, who are biology majors, who are in the classroom or the lab with him. And though he has certainly grown up as a bar mitzvah boy in a conservative situation, I don't know what's going to happen when they choose their mate.
Yes.
I don't know.
Do you have any ideas as to what the Jewish community might be doing? Because this is a big concern.
It's a tremendous,
in terms of
tremendous
keeping
concern.
The Jewish community viable.
Well, I think that the Jewish organizations help keep the Jewish community viable. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be part of the whole, and you have to interweave. You can't do it alone. And organizations, as you said, are recognizing this. That's why you see so much more joint programming. That's why you see so much merging of... After all, the leaders in so many of the organizations are one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
This is cross-fertilization,
right.
If you will.
Right.
And there is absolutely a need to recognize that we must keep our institutions and our organizations and our agencies dynamic, reaching out, pulling in, giving young leadership. I think that every one of us who has served is willing to step aside if indeed there has to be room for young leadership. But I have to tell you this. Federation had a board retreat last summer at Robert Morris College. And thank the Lord for Herman Feinberg. He was the only senior citizen older than I there. And when it came time to give a wrap-up session on a workshop, I had two very young people in my workshop, and they were wonderful. They picked my brains. They wanted to know about this, and they didn't know about that. And when it came time to wrap, they said, "You do the wrap." I said, "No, you do the wrap." So the young and the old did the wrap-up. And I think there has to be a lot more of that. And I think the generational reaching out that we see in programming at the JCC, and programming at Federation, the going to Israel, the missions,
mm-hmm.
all are, I think federations are very sensitive to the need to
mm-hmm.
continue to develop young leadership,
mm-hmm.
to give them an opportunity.
I just wondered if you had any ideas, because I'm just wondering in terms of the future strength of the Jewish community as such, to whom will we look?
To whom will we look?
Do you have any...
I just can't see anything not being done.
For example, National Council of Jewish
yes.
Women, or LHAS.
Yes, they both have...
Do they have programming
yes.
to attract?
Yes. National Council, every group does. I don't think they call them business and professional. I think they call them an evening group. That reminds me. In my presidency of Hospital Aid, I created what we call a young women's evening group. I just thought of it. And this was for the working woman who still had a commitment to the organization in the hospital, who wanted to do something, and it was a very viable group for many years.
Mm-hmm.
There is a great deal of reaching out. The the officers in Hospital Aid are some very young women.
Mm-hmm.
They're all
they are.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
yes. Viable and dynamic.
So you see
women.
It as a potential for there growth
is,
there.
Oh, my. Oh my!
Among
yes.
the younger,
really younger, I'd say the 25 to 35 age group,
mm-hmm.
and this is young marriage.
Yes, right,
marriage.
Right.
There's a tremendous reaching out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just wondered if there are a lot of little things we didn't pick up on that I thought would be very interesting, like your participation in Yiddish theater.
Oh, aren't you nice?
Which should be beautiful because...
Well, do you remember the old Jewish program on WWSW?
Yes.
I sang on that.
Did you sing on that?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, any organization I've been involved in, I've written shows for, written songs for, produced for, directed for.
Was there actually Yiddish theater in Pittsburgh?
No, not. There was the old golden days of the Y Playhouse with
mm-hmm.
the director Al Golden, who went on to Hollywood. I worked with him,
mm-hmm.
And we had really a very strong. This is before Pittsburgh Playhouse came into existence.
Mm-hmm.
We had fun. I was My first adult role was in Front Page. I was 13. Mm-hmm. And then we did Three Men on a Horse. In fact, somebody brought me a picture
in Yiddish.
Of that.
No. Oh, not Yiddish.
No, this was not Yiddish. No.
I just wondered who did Yiddish theater.
I did it as a preschooler. When a Yiddish troupe came through, they needed a little child who spoke Yiddish and sang to be the assimile. You know what the assimile is? That's an orphan.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow somebody got me to their attention, and I traveled with this troupe.
Oh, you did?
I did. I traveled with them. Oh, we went to McKeesport and Wilmerding.
You really went around Pittsburgh.
Around Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I was
Talking about traveling, you also took many trips you once mentioned. You mentioned one to Haiti that was particularly fascinating.
Oh, my dear, that was fabulous. As part of his residency, our son-in-law, who was doing a residency and fellowship in ophthalmology at Yale, had the opportunity to go for 3 months to the Albert Schweitzer Hospital in Deschapelles. And unfortunately, that program has disbanded.
Mm-hmm.
Junior Doc de Vallée was the dictator then.
Mm-hmm.
And our daughter had two little boys then. They took massive inoculations, preventive shots. And she said, Mother, if you can come visit us, would you come? I said, I would adore to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, this is a wonderful story. Well, it was a police state, and she didn't know whether she could get permission to get me in, but she had one of the women whose husband, who was there, call me and say, Donna says, come down on such and such a Sunday. So I got my tickets, went by way of Miami, and froze all kinds of goodies. I mean, I froze bagel, and I froze lox, and I froze corned beef, and I froze brisket, and I brought a care package. I got dry ice on the plane, salami, hot dog, kosher hot dogs, and I took all this stuff down. Now, she had to meet me at Port-au-Prince for me to be able to get through to Deschapelles, and she had the pass, the passe. Never forget, we had a flat tire, and the driver changed that flat tire by the light of the moon at midnight. 45 miles took 4.5 hours to traverse. Oh. That's the kind of roads. That first night, they slept. They had housing that was considered decent. This is a compound. United Fruit had built this post-World War II as part of the Marshall Plan and gone in there. So when the late Andrew Laramie Mellon created this Albert Schweitzer Hospital, he took over this whole compound, and that's where the kids lived. I couldn't sleep all night. They had a concrete block house with windows that didn't have glass but had, and I hear this scratching all night, and I was sure it was a mouse or a rat. I was sure there was, I just didn't sleep all night. And the next morning I said, Donna, what was all that scratching? She said, Mother, I should have told you. Human scavengers going into our garbage cans looking for food.
Isn't that so?
And they didn't have anything because she had a cleaning woman and a cook. And these two people took all the scraps and all the leftovers home for their family. It was one of the most depressing two-week periods in my life.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter said to me, Mother, there's a mission a couple miles down the road. Would you be game to walk down to, it's a Presbyterian mission, to walk down there and visit them? And I hear they have lovely lace and lovely iron. I said, yes, I'll do it with you. So we were up at 5 one morning, and we walked through our corridor and out onto the open road. Well, that 1 or 2 miles became much more, and we're under the blazing sun, and we're walking, and there isn't a soul in sight. And I said, and I'm schwitzing, I'm sweating, I said to my daughter, Donna, Donna, have you heard of the March on Bataan?
It
says to me, did that go off?
No.
Oh, she says to me, Mother, what is that? I said, I feel like I want the march.
Right.
I said, no, buddy, what if one of us drops over? Well, we finally got to that mission run by a charming young couple, Presbyterian children, and we bought a few of their things. Fortunately, they had an old rickety truck that could take us back. It was a tremendous experience for our son-in-law.
Was there?
Paul went down and worked there afterwards.
He did.
He did.
At the Schweitzer
Hospital? He worked at the Schweitzer Hospital.
As a rheumatologist.
As a rheumatologist. He saw cases. It happens they had a tie-in with St. Margaret's. Drew Matheson, who's the head of the Richard King Mellon Foundation,
right,
knew Andrew Laramie Mellon. And he wrote and said, Dr. Kaplan is coming down to visit his son and daughter and son-in-law. And the wife of Dr. Mellon, Jean Grant Mellon, said, well, will he work? And Paul said, yes, he'd be delighted to. Yeah, it was quite an experience.
Mm-hmm.
You've never seen such poverty. Never, never, never. And
Jewish community in Haiti?
Well, if there's any in Port-au-Prince, there was. I doubt if there is now.
Mm-hmm.
But this was Deschapelles, and the hospital, for a long time after he was there, Paul had St. Margaret send them supplies. We never knew whether they got through or not.
How long was Paul at the hospital?
He was just there a little over 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He worked just for a two-week period.
Mm-hmm.
But Stan was there 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that, the only relief I could get from the, I called it, unrelenting sun, was they had a swimming pool. But when there was a rainstorm one night, I heard all this wonderful, gleeful shouting and noise, and I said, Donna, what's going on? Mother, she said, when it rains, all the kids in the compound and around the compound come into the swimming pool to get their baths.
So they really need it. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about
before we stop,
because it has been just fascinating?
Well, I have been most appreciative of your interest and your penetrating awareness of what's gone on, and bringing me back to square one when I would...
Your insights are what really brought this out so beautifully, because...
I think we've covered a great deal.
You've covered a great deal. Any questions, Judy, that you have?
Well, maybe in the remaining couple minutes, you would like to tell us a good story about your trips with the Pittsburgh Symphony. Maybe one last dynamite story.
Oh, my goodness. Did I tell you about meeting the Minister of Culture in China?
No.
Oh, I didn't? This is fine. I'll try to wrap this up.
Yeah.
We had been in China ourselves for a month in 82 on a medical archaeological trip. We were delighted when the symphony was invited to play in Beijing. They had just a 2 or 3 night stand. When Paul prepared his medications, am I repeating anything you know here, for these trips, he would always have an enormous trunk backstage filled with everything that would go from the tip of the head to the toes, you know, to be prepared for any emergency. And most of the time, that medication could go through on the trunk with the instruments. But on a few occasions, and this was one of them, when we were going into China, they demanded that all of that be in the doctor's possession. So in addition to our own 2 suitcases each, which isn't bad for a month,
mm-hmm,
which meant 4 suitcases, we had 2 huge suitcases filled with medications. And we had to be responsible for getting these off the... They didn't have carousels, whatever they had in the Beijing airport. And my responsibility was to find luggage carts or anything resembling a luggage cart. Well, over 400 people disembarked from this plane into Beijing, and maybe there were 12 luggage carts, and the Chinese passengers were smart enough to run and grab them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Paul is standing with 6 huge pieces of luggage, and we just can't move them all without something to put them on to go through customs. I dash out, and I see a chain leading to the outer lobby, or what you will, of this really very rustic kind of airport. And I just realized that all the luggage carts available were going to be on the other side of that chain. So I lifted the chain, and I go out. And I come into a floodlight of television cameras. Patty Burns and KBKA were there to greet the arriving Pittsburgh Symphony. And this charming little wonderful man comes up to me, and he says, as he bows and bows to me, Pittsburgh Symphony, Pittsburgh Symphony. And I say, yes, yes, I am indeed Pittsburgh, but you don't want me, you don't want me.
you want Maestro Marcel? And you want the principal players? Oh, he said, delighted to know you. I said, I'm the wife of the doctor, and I'm really looking for some luggage carts. Not knowing, you know, well, I'm being filmed. Later, I said to Patty Burns, Patty, you're not using that. Oh, she said, Gert, that was adorable. Of course I'm using it. I never saw it. Now, we come to our magnificent reception, and here is the Minister of Culture, and they're about to introduce us, and he says, oh, Mrs. Kaplan is my first American friend from the Pittsburgh Symphony.
He really took you on.
He was wonderful, as were Ambassador Winston Lord and Mrs. Lord. Mm-hmm. They were lovely, and we got to know them very well. I have one other funny story. May I? Is there time?
Sure.
We'll see how far it goes.
When we got to Hong Kong the first time with the symphony, the ambassador wasn't really an ambassador. He was a consul general. His name was the Honorable Burton Levin, L-E-V-I-N, mm-hmm. obviously Jewish, and married to a lovely Chinese lady, Lily Levin. And we're invited to the embassy after a concert. And we go through the line, and I'm wearing a sequin top, and Lily Levin says to me, as she identifies the sequin top, and she says, with a chiffon skirt, I love your top. Did you get it here? And I said, no, I must confess I got it at Saks in Pittsburgh. But that sort of identified us to her. Now, I see on her...